going to talk now about her work on the island of Aig.
Good morning. My name is Lucy Conway, and as I said, I'm here from Aig. Here to talk about the interface between culture and climate change. And it became clear to me yesterday that neither is clear, neither is definable, and we're not going to agree on either by the end of tomorrow. But what I really want to talk about is our culture on the Isle of Aig, and what at first glance people think is what we're doing to tackle climate change on our island. These images will just sort of randomly float across the screen behind me, so please don't try to relate them to what I'm talking about, just enjoy the pictures. What we're really doing, what our lives are all about, is almost, if you like, taking our future in our hands and doing something about it. And again, in the context of last night's conversation, it's the idea of moving from dreams and fantasies to some kind of reality. Aig, which is the island there, is about, does anybody know where it is? Has anybody been to Aig?
Yeah.
Excellent. It's in northwest of Scotland. It's about 12 miles off Malig on the mainland. And it's about 5 miles by three. We've got 90 people who live there, so about a third of the folk who are here, perhaps. Our main industries are tourism in the summer, agriculture. We have services, the school, the doctors, and so on. And one of the best things initially is people most know about is that in 1997 it was bought by the community out of private ownership. Before 1997, before 15 years ago, the islanders suffered from a lack of security of tenure, very poor infrastructure, very low employment, a low population which was declining and aging, and no means electricity. Since 1997, in that 15 years, our population has increased by 25%. We're retaining and young people are returning. There's new businesses started, a lot more employment, albeit some of it very low paying and seasonal. Massive improvements in infrastructure, housing, and so on. And particularly, one of the things we're going to talk about just now is our electricity company, which is called Aig Electric. Before Aig Electric happened, most houses were individually powered by generators. So you'd have your own generator, whatever size. Some people had tiny hydros or a wind turbine, but generally it was generators, which were dirty, expensive, smelly, and everywhere you went across the island, you'd hear thud, 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 for hours and hours and hours. It was roughly 65 pence per kilowatt, so it was phenomenally expensive. We've been looking for a solution to our electricity problems since the buyback, since 1997. This is the school kids when they were saying goodbye to the generator. We've been looking for a solution since the buyout, and in 2008 we switched on our own electricity system, an integrated system for those who like figures of 110 kilowatts of hydro, 10 and more recently 30 kilowatts of photovoltaic, 24 kilowatts of wind, and we have a backup generator. Overall, to date, since 2008, we're about 86% renewable. We're constantly looking for ways in which we can increase that. Like, for example, we just bought another 20 kilowatts of photovoltaic. When we were designing the system, we had to think about how much electricity we would need and how much we would provide, and also how much we would charge for it. And the two became part of the same discussion. Because although, in theory, the fixed capacity of all those three elements is 164 kilowatts, in practice, what's on average available is around about 80, 85 kilowatts. That's between 40 households and roughly 10 to 12 businesses. So if you've got a fixed finite amount of electricity being generated, it doesn't take two brain cells to work out if everybody used as much as they wanted all the time, we'd run out pretty quickly. So we had to come up with a system whereby everybody would have electricity all the time. And we could have done that by price, because you could have been charged a small amount of money up to a certain amount of kilowatts to encourage you to use less, and then lots more if you wanted to use more. But all that would mean is that people who had money could buy as much as they wanted. And possibly, if people run their pools or whatever else, possibly at one point we would be back to a situation where everybody was using as much as they wanted and therefore would all run out. So instead of which, we put in a capped system where each household is capped at 5 kilowatts use at any one time. And most people I imagine you're a fairly educated audience in these regards, but most people that we have coming to visit the island have no clue what 5 kilowatts means. An average kettle is roughly 3 kilowatts. So our cap system basically provides everybody with equal access to power. Oh, see, my WhatsApp just died. There we go. A cap system provides everybody with equal access to power rather than on the ability to be able to pay. And we pay 20 pence per unit. Each house has an hour meter, which tells you what you're using at any one point. And if you go over your 5 kilowatts, your house switches off. And the electricity company has to come and turn you back on again. And since 2008, it's been maybe about 10 or 12 times since that's happened. It's quite hard to get to 5 kilowatts, we find. It works because we know how much energy things take. We've got to, as well as the hour meter, we've kind of got a running adding up machine in our head, adding what we're using at any one time. Most of, all of our appliances are low energy, and we buy them. We go see, we have very bizarre conversations, which, have you seen the latest AAA, whatever. We're also extremely connected to where our power comes from. If it's windy, great, electricity is being made. If it's wet, great, you know, hydro is being produced. So we're very connected to where our power comes from. We understand the idea, because we're on an island, about the concept of finite, of limited resources. We're not on mains water, we're not on mains electricity. We have to produce a lot of our own food. We have to, we're used to the idea of a finite resource. And of course, it's our electricity company, so we have an interest in it as well. As well as the cap, we also have what we call a traffic light system, which we came upon ever so often when it's a still day and it's not been raining for a while. And so we're relying on just the photovoltaics as our source of power generation. So that's 30 kilowatts of PVs. What we do is we say it's a red traffic light day, and there's a poster put up and an email go around, and we're about to actually literally erect a traffic light system with lights going off. And when the red light's on, we ask people to moderate their use, to spread their demand through the day, to not use electric kettles, perhaps use their gas instead, and so on. And that reduces their power demand by 20% over and above our normal, which is half as much as the average UK household uses. So basically, we've designed a system which is about balancing supply and demand. But to have that access to energy, we need to work together, and we need to work with and within the limits of our environment. But don't believe that we're a community of eco-warriors. We absolutely don't knit our own yogurt or eat lentils only. We don't have hair shirts, we're not into all that. We're as normal, we're as regular as if you were to pluck 90 people out of the street out there, that would be as representative as we are in terms of politics, beliefs, habits, morals, behaviour, and so on. We're not an intentional green community by any means. But what we are is a group of people that live together on an island who absolutely have to achieve a balance between individual and collective need. Our electricity system works on 3 renewable sources, as I said, and if we were to rely too much on just one of those sources, we would quickly run out. And similarly, when we're deciding on how we're going to operate as a community, the decisions we make about how we progress in our development, we have 3 strands, and those are economic, social, and environmental. It's about balance. If we were to prioritise one of those development strands over another one, then we would quickly falter. Community ownership, of course, brings with it huge responsibilities. It requires massive amounts of energy, stamina, commitment, patience, a thick skin, an open mind, and open ears and eyes. It also requires a vast amount of volunteering. We have something like 22 committees to do things for 90 people. People ask what we do in the winter, what do you think? So egg culture is about pragmatism and hard work. It's about imagination and innovation. It's about equity. It's about cooperation and competition. We believe in a can-do attitude. We believe that it takes all sorts. The idea of dig where you stand. We believe in blunt talk and kindness. We're also very good at celebrating and throw a very good party. Our culture also, of course, includes music. It includes shared food, skilled craftsmanship, and art, whatever that means. 18% of eggs people earn their living by being creative, either entirely or largely. That compares about 8% nationally. 100% of eggs people indulge in creative activity, whether that's dancing at a ceilidh, whether it's going to the Burns Supper, with the school play or just playing music together. The island's a magnet for artists, writers, musicians, filmmakers of every kind. The arts on Egg are all about celebration, they're about sharing. They're as much about skill and utility as beauty and debate. I'm setting up an organisation called Eggbox, and the idea behind that is to provide a shared workspace for resident as well as visiting artists. For those living on the island, we provide them somewhere to work, somewhere to make a living, where they can support and work together. It will reduce isolation and give them a sense of viability. For visiting artists, it provides them with a space to work in with a community that's passionate and driven about one thing, and that one thing is making Egg the best it can be. It's not perfect, and we sometimes fight, and there's lots and lots more to do, but we've achieved a huge amount in terms of climate change and other aspects. Our emissions have been reduced by 46%, and we're continuing to find new ways of reducing carbon. Let me just put you back onto. Disappeared entirely that way. We continue to find new ways of reducing our carbon. It's such a pretty picture. But many of these things that we're doing are not because they're green. They're because they save money. They reduce our reliance on outside inputs. They use what we have in our own backyard. And because they're the best way of balancing economic, social, and environmental development. They help us retain a viable and empowered community, and they help us avoid harmful effects on other people, places, and our future generations. I would argue that our goal in tackling climate change as this community is basically taking action to ensure that everybody throughout the world is warm, fed, and feels safe. To me, those are the three things actually is all we need, to be warm, fed, and to feel safe. Our lives on Egg have hugely improved since 1997. We now have those things and more in abundance. We might not have some of what our great cities have in terms of theatres and galleries, but then we don't have our beaches and our sunsets and our sea. Electricity, the internet, a roll-on, roll-off ferry, and more secure and greater incomes have resulted in massive change. But if we're all to aim for a just and sustainable society, as somebody said last night, then we have to keep working at it. Being creative is at its very heart. It's more than just a means of sharing and interpreting what we do. Art and culture is at the heart of our community. It's the fuel that's provided the energy and has kept us going for the last 15 years.